Hello, hello, and welcome to the Body Meets Mind podcast. Tommy, it's such a goddamn pleasure to have you on the show.
It is. And, you know, I'm a very important person.
Let me just remark that I just introduced you like you were a guest as well. It's so wonderful to have you on the show as I do have you on the show every single episode.
It's so wonderful.
Every single episode.
It's important. It's wonderful to have you on the show, given the fact that you're on at least 100% of the shows, and we hope that continues. No, it's good. It's great to be here. We haven't recorded one in a while, Paulie, so I'm really excited about it. How are you doing down there in lovely Melbourne?
Yeah, Melbourne's going great. Look, there's been I think I've actually had the opposite extreme of life to what you've been experiencing. You've had a lot of upheaval and stirring and a lot of displacement. And I've had a lot of grounding and a lot of slightly vanilla existence.
Right, a bit of groundhog.
You know, it's always nice to have a little bit of texture of both. But as it seems, you've been having a little bit too much of the other side of the fence.
Well, mate, that's actually a lovely segue for today's guest, because what I love about music is that it does flow between two, you know, the chaos and the difference in the verses, you know, and the changes in the bridge and the verses, but then also a lovely, you know, safe, certain structure of a chorus. So what do you reckon? Should we get into it?
I love that. And I love that segue as well, Tommy. Podge Pollack, it is so lovely to see you and have you on the show. Podge, I'm just going to give the guests and the viewers at home just a little bit of a description of who you are and what you do. Podge, otherwise known as Rodney, is a registered music therapist who has a passion for connecting people to their internal and external worlds through music. Since completing his Masters of Music in 2017, Podge has worked across a multitude of settings in both hospitals, community, not-for-profit organizations. He has experience providing music therapy to people in support with various different contexts, for example, mental health, progressive neurological disorders, schizophrenic disorders, pediatrics, adolescence, disability, aged care, and dementia and palliative care. He now also facilitates both meditations to the general public. Apologies for that, Podge. That's super fascinating. Firstly, Podge, thank you so much for jumping on the show. It's been a couple of months in the waiting, and I'm super excited to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And yeah, very excited to be here. And I think that little Freudian slip about the meditation was really apt, because, you know, music is a medicine. So I think that's the hat I wear in what I do. So thank you for that Freudian slip. I might change it to sound bath medications.
Sound bath medications. I love medications. It. Let's start there let's dive into what kind of drew you, like, because I've known you for a very long time, and ever since I've known you, you've had a passion for music and creative arts and expression. I'd love to dive into what kind of drew you into the world of making it a lifestyle for yourself, but also for those around you, and a medication to be prescribed to others.
Yeah, it's a great question. So, you know, I started playing guitar when I was 9 years old, and music for me, and in terms of playing, it was always something very kind of personal, and something I didn't love sharing, didn't actually love practicing guitar either. So it was kind of a bit of an uphill battle. And it was kind of always in the background. I was, you know, did VCE music at school. But music for me was never something that I thought would be a profession or a career. You know, it didn't seem that secure. I didn't know what my offering could be. And, you know, performing, even though I was in various bands and duets over, you know, the years after school, it wasn't something I was like, you know, really passionate about making as a career. long story short, I know we've only got half an hour, 45 minutes. Finishing school, I knew I wanted to help people in a creative capacity. And at the time, I didn't really know what was out there. You know, music therapy, I only found out about in, I think it was 2010. I ended up studying psychology and management marketing. And after that course, I didn't really connect with it. It was like quite clinical on the psychology front, and marketing was more, you know, business oriented. And it just, like, it didn't align with my values, and I couldn't see myself studying further at that time. And I ended up falling into an industry in the construction industry through my family business. So I just kind of fell into that, and I was there for about 3 years, and then ended up being in construction doing, you know, contracts admin, project management for about 7 years. And, you know, throughout that time, learned a lot of skills, but probably learned more about myself and what's important to me. And I think when, you know, the lesson that I got in that 7 years was, if I was living out of alignment, and I'm going to get kicked in the face many times. And so I constantly, you know, I was comfortable in that industry, and it was secure and it was safe. But it just, yeah, it wasn't fulfilling me on many levels. Throughout my 20s, everyone that I met, I just was curious about what they did as a profession, as a career. And yeah, this one person that I met at a friend's birthday, and we were just having a jam session. He said he was a music therapist, and that was, you know, a bit of a light bulb moment. I think I was 25 at the time. He said he was a music therapist. I ended up shadowing him for a day or for 2 hours, and it just was like quite exhausting, even just observing. So for about 5 years, I just had this music therapy idea on the shelf, not feeling quite ready to make the transition, but also, I guess, throughout the 5 years since finding out about it and actually making that change, it was really questioning, what is music for me, and do I have capacity to offer it? And I think what the turning point was, if I can help people with the music skills that I've got, then that's a fulfilling purpose that I'd love to take the challenge. So that was kind of the journey I took. Yeah.
Mm. Love that. Wow. It's amazing. It's for everyone that doesn't know, I think including myself, I can kind of intuit what's kind of loosely associated with music therapy, but can you take us on a deep dive and tell us kind of what's involved? Is it like a one-on-one thing? Is it with groups? And how does the music and therapy components weave together?
Yeah, so it's a bit of both. It's one-on-one and it's group, and sometimes the families are involved. You know, as a broad terminology of music therapy, it's really using music as a resource to make the change in people's health goals. So it's really identifying what it is, what's going on for them in their life, and using music as a tool. So similar to a physiotherapist, where they'll use movement in the body to create that change, we'll use music to create that change. So, and what we know about music and the way we respond to it is, you know, it's a full brain process. So it's not like language that's kind of targeted to one area of the brain. You know, memory is one area of the brain. With music, it actually activates the whole brain, and you'll see that in, you know, MRI scans that where people are listening to music, it's all lit up and activated. So as music therapists, we kind of use music as a way to kind of manipulate in a positive way the responses that people have. So, you know, as an example, and it's really using people's relationship to music and using their preferences of music, because everyone, it's impossible for humans to not respond to music. So as soon as there's music playing, we will, you know, we hear it and we, you know, we automatically kind of tap along to it. We'll tap our feet, we'll tap our hands. So it's almost impossible not to respond to it. And even, you know, the vibratory aspects of music, like we can feel it. And, you know, music, it's interesting that we don't know as a collective what music therapy is, because we actually use music as therapy for ourselves all the time, as, you know, a way to self-regulate, to regulate our moods, to remind us of positive memories, or, you know, might want to reminisce about a breakup and just like, you know, go into that kind of emotion. Or, you know, we use it for rituals and celebrations. So, you know, it's really harnessing those qualities of music that we have outside of, I guess, a clinical setting, and bringing that in to that setting. So I might use a palliative care example just on that front of like, humans not being automatically responding to music. So there's a theory called entrainment. So it's where two opposing rhythms will synchronize. So what we can do in, you know, in palliative care, if someone's not actively responding, we'll be able to still regulate their breathing, make them more relaxed through synchronizing the rhythm of the music to the heartbeat, and then just reducing that tempo. So just even on that level, we can, there's a lot we can do, and that's kind of fairly surface level as a theory of kind of tempo regulation and entrainment. But that kind of, just based on that, you know, there's a lot we can do with music to adjust people's mood, breathing, comfort, and the rest. Yeah.
It sounds like there's an applicable place for music for humans to be able to interact and grow with it in every stage of their life cycle. You've given a poignant example of someone towards the end of their lives. I mean, from my experience and the research I've done into music, it's really one of the most primal vehicles that humans have to be able to express themselves through voice, dance, interaction with community. I'm going to draw on an example literally that I just went through this morning with my youngest child, Jude. I was at a music class with him, and I had the pleasure of being able to witness him. And I see this all the time with him in a non-structured environment, but I had the pleasure of going to a music class that he goes to. He's only, you know, 23 months old, but the unbridled connection that kids have to music and rhythm and self-expression through the way they connect with music before self-doubt and what am I looking like in this environment versus, you know, just being a complete natural essence and connection with an external force, becoming into your internal world, was a beauty to behold. And I'm not just saying that because I'm his dad. It was a really beautiful thing to be able to see, because I feel like once we step into different stages of development, certain, like I said, levels of self-consciousness come into the picture, disallowing us to connect to these primal connections with the music world. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that kind of sense of presence that people have engaging with music and music making, and when there's this collective experience in a group environment, they're kind of like stripped from whatever's going on in their minds. And it might take, you know, music can take us deeper into our emotions, but it can also take us out, and like just in terms of becoming present, having that state of flow and connecting to to others,
which is powerful. On that as well, like when you were talking, Paulie, what I'm thinking more is around this idea of how music is the conduit that binds all of us into a collective power. You know, it merges us, and the scene that, I don't know why my head works like this, but I just see everything in pictures. And when you were talking, I pictured, do you guys see the, can't remember it's the first or the second Matrix where they're all dancing in unison and it's just this, it's all one the way they do it. And it's just unbelievably beautiful. And it's my favorite therapist calls this kind of thing like when the lonely eye merges into the we. And it's got to be one of the most powerful forces that we have. I actually, just to bounce off that, Podge, do we know anything about the evolutionary reasons as to why music is so powerful? I remember reading a theory as to, I'm not sure if it was conclusive or anything, but how close we are to the rhythm of our mother's heartbeat when we're in utero, and if that has something to do with it. But yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, if we think about the heartbeat, we are actually, you know, we're rhythmic beings. Everything in nature, in the world is, you know, pulsating. There's a beat, there's a harmony, there's music to it. So I don't know from an evolutionary perspective, but, you know, what you said about the mother's heartbeat and that connection, there's, you know, I guess just going to, I spoke about palliative care for a bit, but going back to birth, children that are born prematurely, often, you know, in the hospital setting, there's this disconnect from their mothers, from their fathers. And what we do as music therapists is like using music as a way to form that bond. And part of that is just connecting to the heartbeat, connecting to the rhythm of each other. And yeah, music's a great way to connect to that as well. So, but from an evolutionary perspective, I can't quite answer that.
But I don't think there's
But there's definitely a rhythmic aspect to it. And I think just the way, you know, we communicate and it's quite a highly evolved evolutionary process. And you know, we're really built to respond and engage with music.
The palliative care example is particularly powerful for me because we did a podcast on this, Paulie and I. It was about 5-ish months ago now, but a very close companion of ours passed away. He was in palliative care. He was our older dog, a Beagle-ear. And I rushed to Kmart of all places that day because I was really felt the real need to just get a photo because I've been putting it off for so long to get a photo of Steve. I called him Steve. It was a human name. I've been wanting to do that my whole life, just by the way. So I rushed to Kmart to get it. And Shiny Happy People by REM came on. And I bawled my eyes out because I remember seeing my mum dance to that. It was just, there's a lot of emotional significance to that song. But now I can't listen to that song. I try to. I honestly do try to. I had it in a playlist once and it just makes me cry way too quickly. It's way too powerful. So it's amazing how music can do that. It can just bring you back into these emotions.
Yeah.
So the palliative care scenario, I think, is like really powerful for me.
Yeah. And I think that's true. You know, sorry to hear about the loss.
No, okay.
Thanks for sharing that. But that it's a good point because, like, you know, this is one song that for you, it's got this response that's highly emotional and, you know, it has grief in there. And I think, you know, as a music therapist, we can't, you know, we can't prescribe what song is going to best suit this person's situation because, you know, everybody has a different association to music, to songs. And it's so deeply and strongly embedded in memory and yeah, the emotions. So I really kind of appreciate you bring that up. And just to be, mindful of the music that we listen to. And when we are kind of going through that, those deeper emotional processing in life, you know, we know, and there's research in music therapy about, you know, do we sit in that ruminating state of sorrow when we're going through that grief? And music's such a beautiful way to match that. It really speaks to us and we feel held and validated by the music. But it's also important not to kind of stay in that ruminating music listening for too long. And it's actually important to have music that kind of brings you out of that as well. So yeah, we talk a lot about like creating playlists that are gonna really match where you're at, but then also move you out. So the mind and body is a little bit heightened, but also acknowledge the feelings that are going on.
On that topic, Pudge, this really heavily reminded me of a quote I recently read by the great John Frusciante, who was talking about creating music that can be low-spirited, but the beauty in it. And I thought this was a really interesting kind of quote. He says, "Even if my songs are a bit low-spirited, they make me happy. I become happy when I hear sad songs. When you sing about sad things in a beautiful way, the atmosphere turns upside down," which I truly can identify with. Sometimes, you know, I used to play competitive sports. I used to play football as a young man, and you know, people would have rev up songs before before a game, and my rev up song was a song by Soundgarden called "Like Suicide."
Oh, I love that song.
It's an amazing song, but it's not exactly a rev up song, right? In the classical sense of the word. But there was something within that song that made me hungry, that drove me, that actually gave me fire. So what John Frusciante was talking about there, that flipping of the coin, two sides of the same coin, really, really resonated with me. I'd love to know your thoughts, Hodge.
Yeah, I think, you know, with music, as I said before, everyone has a different association to it. And, you know, I remember like in when I was working in mental health, you know, we would, you know, have this group setting where, you know, we'll share music and, you know, one person really wanted to share this kind of really heavy, I think it was like death metal song. And for him, it was like super relaxing because it kind of matched where he was at. And it was able to kind of, that was just his relaxation strategy. So, and for other people, it was really anxiety provoking and stressful. Yeah. So it was just, you know, it really highlighted that there is no one responds to music the same way. And yeah, I think that's the beautiful thing about music. And, you know, we all have to find the music that matches us. And yeah, I think that's a great example that you mentioned, Paulie.
Isn't that because it's like,
yeah, go on.
Sorry, Paul. I was just as I'm hearing you both talk there, it's like there's such a unique individualistic aspect to the music that resonates with us and the way in which it does. You know, for one person, death metal is just aggressive, and you know, you do it, you listen to it before you jump on the footy field, or you listen to it when you're really angry, when you want to beat into a pillow, whatever it is. But with someone else, death metal is really sad and somber, because most often the words that these kind of heavy metal bands are using in their lyrics are about pain and suffering. You know, like Right Now by Korn is like a really powerful, suffering inducing song, yet it's like heavy metal. So I wonder what that is like for people when they are able to engage with people who have resonated with these songs in the same way. Do you know what I mean? Like,
can you say that last bit again, Tommy?
Well, I'm just thinking, like, if you and I, you know, let's say, because when I listen to Like Suicide, that down, 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 you know, that it doesn't make me necessarily get pumped up, but it makes me think about kind of the deeper aspects of life and all that sort of thing, you know. But then I wonder what it might be like if I was listening to that song before a game and you happened to be listening to that song as well. There'd be this like powerful connection that would occur right in that moment, because not only are we listening to the same song, but we're actually listening to it for the same reason. Like for you, Podge, would that ever come up, that sort of thing come up in like a group therapy session where people are actually resonating with the same song for the same reason?
I think it might be rare because music is so varied and people's experiences of life are so varied that it might not be the exact same reason. But I think the collective And the unity that we feel in music listening together in a group environment. And I think, you know, concerts and festivals are a really a great example of that kind of unified experience of music as a collective, where we all feel, yeah, this oneness in the music. Mm. But we don't necessarily know the reason why people are, you know, feel connected to that song or what their memories are or experiences. But yeah, music has a beautiful way of, you know, of connectivity, as yeah, you were saying before, Paulie. Yeah.
Podge, I'd love to transition to the playing of music. And I'd love to know what part your facilitation in assisting your clients in the playing, the physical interaction with rhythmical instruments or whatever it might be. Is there a part in your musical therapy guidance that allows for that?
Yeah, absolutely. And it, you know, it depends, kind of going back to, you know, the definition of music therapy. It's really working out what the goals are for the person we're working with. If that is for active engagement and music playing, then we'll go then. It's a big part of music therapy. A lot of what I'm doing at the moment in palliative care is relaxation and you know, guided meditations with music. So there's not a whole lot of playing that they're doing. I also have private clients in NDIS, and they're, you know, there's a bit more active engagement in terms of playing there. And it's, yeah, really finding, you know, instruments that are accessible and resonant that people can connect with. So and also, you know, tuition. There's one client I have that I teach guitar to, and that's, you know, therapeutically indicated. That's what he wanted to do, and he's, you know, got a schizoaffective disorder. So having the sense of mastery and focus and skill development is important. But yeah, I guess playing is a big part of it, depending on the client group.
Is there, I'm interested in the NDIS system in the world in relationship to music therapy. And I know this is a really broad term, and it's a very, very diverse world. But does there appear to be like a common expression of instrumentation that that people that you have personally dealt with that seems to resonate with them, or does it vary?
As in which instrument specifically, or?
Or even what type of, like if it's a rhythmical,
So great question. I think, you know, traditionally it's a lot of kind of like rhythmic instruments and, you know, melodic rhythmic instruments like a xylophone or something like that. In the last year, I've been using, I kind of collected a whole lot of like traditional sound healing instruments. And that's kind of where I'm moving my practice to. So I've purchased a handpan, which is that UFO looking instrument, and it resonates for days. And most people in sessions, they just really connect to playing that because it's such a strong vibration, and it really kind of, you can feel it in the body. So I think people, a lot of them, like in NDIS, it's a lot about kind of regulating anxiety and mood and having this kind of tactile experience. The handpan has been something that has resonated for people really, really strongly, and it's, you know, quite easy to play with beaters and the rest. So kind of leaning towards that at the moment, but traditionally percussive instruments or anything that's kind of accessible. And also just kind of trying out different instruments, so bring them different instruments to sessions and seeing what they connect to, because, you know, everyone has a different relationship to music, everyone has a different relationship to instruments. So I kind of walk into sessions sometimes with, you know, a full load of instruments, just to get the right one for them.
Like, I'm like picturing like a Dick Van Dyke type thing in Sound of Music, and you got the whole one.
Exactly. It's pretty much that. Yeah. I'm just missing the bass drum on the back.
I love
that, because the preparation that you must have when you first step into a session is that of really preparing yourself for being super intuitive. Obviously, there's probably like other preparation that you can that can take place, but intuition must play a really big role in connecting with your clients.
Yeah, spot on. And it's interesting that you say that, because I'm just kind of reflecting back to, you know, studying the Masters of Music Therapy, and such a big part of it was planning for sessions, and we have to do like these treatment plans, which, you know, we need to do. But then in the session, just, you know, whatever you've got planned is just thrown out the window, and being able to kind of just really meet the person where they're at, what they need, and just really be guided by them. It's quite amazing how kind of sessions can, you think it's going to happen one way, and then it's just out the window in the most beautiful way.
I'm sure you and I, Tom, can both kind of relate to that as well in the work that we do. You know, you can create as rigid a structured session as you possibly want to, but ultimately when you're in the flow of the interaction of the session, your client requires something, you can intuit that, and you need to follow suit.
Yeah,
absolutely. I totally agree. And I think planning in the beginning is good when you're a beginner at something, you know, and I think you'd like you know, like driving a car, you have to really plan where you're going to go, because you don't know what you're doing. And I think eventually these kind of unconscious systems take over as they become more integrated, and you become more and more of an expert at something. And eventually work that's fulfilling starts to really feel like flow, you know. And I think flow is like the epitome of what we're all trying to achieve in our personal and professional endeavors. Podge, I would love to know what drew you to palliative care. That's a particularly interesting area for me. So.
Yeah, good question. Thanks for asking. My first placement at uni was in palliative care. And, you know, I remember the feeling in my body and my mind. I was like, oh, it's going to be dark, depressing. I'm not ready for that. I don't want to do it. It's going to be really challenging. You know, I had, you know, people in my life that had passed. I'm like, way too triggering. I'm not like just all this kind of fear response. And then when I was in it, talking about flipping the coin, like about my expectation of what it was and what it actually is, was completely different. And, you know, we think of palliative care as, you know, death, grief, sorrow, which there is part of that, but the overall goal of palliative care is quality of life. And I think what changed for me and what really resonated was that these people are alive. They've still, and if palliative is, you know, from their diagnosis to the end. And there's a whole lot that can be, there's a whole lot of living in that time. And I think, you know, my experience of palliative care in the placement was that these, you know, people at the end stage of their life, they hold all the wisdom, all the lessons, all the vulnerability and openness, and they're really generous. And if I think about, you know, myself in that stage of life, I imagine it's like quite a space of solitude and like just wanting to be with family and friends, and to let a stranger in and share like such intimate experiences and be open to, you know, like what is music therapy? Like people don't know. And it's like, it can be a really easy sell. It can be a hard sell. But the simple fact of them letting me into their world at that stage of their life is, yeah, very generous. And it was, you know, out of all the placements that I had, and, you know, I was at the Royal Children's, I was at Scope, so adult disability, and I was in India for a placement. But yeah, the palliative was just the most meaningful, and where I saw the music really impact the biggest change in a meaningful way. So that's kind of, yeah, what resonated really strongly for me. And that's why I'm in it, and I think I will be in it for a long time. But I, you know, the with that, there's a fine balance of how much time I spend doing that. And for a little bit, I was doing it full time, and I don't think that's sustainable. Sure. So at the moment, I'm just doing it, yeah, 2 days a week, pretty much.
Yeah,
which I think is a sweet spot.
It's such a heavy place to be. And I mean heavy not in a negative sense. I mean like in a true technical sense. You know, when you're really faced with the groundlessness that is life, you know, we cling on to things all the time to try to, you know, unconsciously remind ourselves that we're immortal, whether that be through the work we do, our relationships, you know, whatever it is. And I think palliative care, end of life, I read a lot of that sort of stuff, helps me in my work. And I just think it's so raw and powerful and true and authentic. And, you know, Paulie and I had a guy on the show who did some research on the end of life dreams and visions of people who are passing. Mm. And one of the things that he really opened my eyes up to, I'm sure you could probably speak to this as well, Paulie, is that the medical system regards palliative care as a failure by definition, because medicine is all about keeping the person healthy, you know, and alive. And with palliative care, it's all about letting go of all that, you know. But I think medicine, from that kind of psychological or spiritual context, is another form of clinging, especially when you're faced with an incurable illness. And I think when people are able to move from hope of something else to acceptance of the inevitable, it sounds to me like what you're saying, you know, and especially with music acting as a catalyst for that kind of growth, it can lead to kind of the most profound changes. And even for you, mate, from a selfish perspective, I can imagine some of the conversations you'd have with these individuals would just be the greatest things I can imagine anyway.
Mm.
That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah. It's interesting what you said about the medical profession and palliative care kind of being a failure of that. And I think what we're seeing at the moment is, you know, what is medicine and what is the overall meaning of health? And I think, you know, especially in palliative care or in any other health profession, we're really seeing more of a shift to this holistic idea of what it is to be healthy. And I think music has a great part to play in that. So yeah.
Pudge, I'm aware of the time, but before we start winding up, I want to draw some attention to what appears to be a real passion of yours, which is sound meditation or medication, which is what you appear to be really, really like amongst many other things. It appears to be a big passion of yours. What's drawn you to this world, and what's given you the fire to kind of build in there?
Great question. Thanks for asking. You know, so I actually knew about
for Paulie. He's doing well.
As are you. It's a collective. You're a That's team, collective. Right? So before I knew about music therapy, I knew about sound healing first, and which makes sense because it's been around for thousands of years. And when I was kind of making the decision to do music therapy, I also had sound healing as something I really wanted to do, but there was no, I couldn't see a course or anything that really harnessed the learning of it. And I kind of wanted something that was credible. And my expectation in studying music therapy, I thought that would cover sound healing practices, because I imagined it would have been, you know, a continuum of you know, development of a profession. But yeah, what I found was music therapy and sound healing with this kind of dichotomous experiences and discourses. And as part of the course, we needed to do a minor thesis. And I was just like, I don't want to do any research. That's like my, I, academic was not my thing. Did it for the course, but I was just like, what am I going to research? And what really stood out to me was, why is sound healing not incorporated in music therapy? And are there any music therapists using sound healing? Actually, I spoke to my lecturer and she said, you know, sound healing is not a music therapy topic, so you probably shouldn't do it. I did it anyway. I felt it was important. And I found a few music therapists that were using sound healing, like in the States, in Canada. And I guess the recommendation was, you know, it would be remiss of us as a profession to ignore sound healing that's been used for thousands of years. And even though, you know, it hasn't been researched on a clinical basis, it has a lot of anecdotal evidence, and it works, and music therapists are using it anyway, so let's just incorporate it into the field. So that was kind of where I left it as when I was studying and moving into, you know, being a music therapist for I guess the last 4 or 5 years. I didn't feel that I had the credibility or the know-how to do sound healing. It just like was something I put on the shelf and I was like, I'll do it later. When I bought this, and it was always something I wanted to do, I kind of felt this drive to do it, but I was kind of not necessarily listening or acting on what I was hearing. Purchased the handpan a year and a bit ago, and you know, I was doing guided relaxations originally on guitar, and then brought the handpan into it, and people's experiences, you know, from what they told me, was just a lot deeper, a lot more visual, a lot more emotive, a lot more resonant. And then I was doing a workshop for very special kids kind of towards the middle of last year, and I wanted to do this kind of sound bath meditation. So I just bought a whole lot of instruments that kind of tied in as well. In April, I went up to Cairns. I bought a Yidaki, or traditionally known as didgeridoo. And so I incorporated that into the workshop, and then I was like, oh, maybe I'll just try it in palliative care. And from then I was just like, I saw people's responses that were just a lot more profound than what I was doing traditionally in music therapy, people having, you know, these joyous experiences or moments of respite and relaxation that they hadn't felt in, you know, 2 years. You know, their breathing just really regulated more strongly than what I was doing before. Just this deep restorative practice. And I started incorporating that into music therapy, and it is, you know, looking back on it, I probably should have just done that years ago, because it still is music therapy. It's not that much different to what I was doing, different instrumentation, and it's using like the sound and the vibrations and the frequencies to make that change. When I was working in palliative care full time, I was getting burnt out a little bit. And so I think my passion was leading more towards working with healthier people and using music in a way to support them. And it's a really nice balance working in that clinical space and now working with, you know, the general public and providing the sound bath meditations, you know, for them. And it's just, yeah, it's, I'm fairly, you know, I've done, you know, a handful of sound bath meditations for people, maybe more than a few handfuls. people's responses are just like, it's super powerful. People resonate to it quite strongly. I did one on a Monday night after a weekend a few months ago, and, you know, people kind of came in saying like, oh, I was so frazzled from the Monday and like hungover or whatever it was from the weekend. And they like came into like the sound bath initially like exhausted, and you know, they came out of it just like feeling really restored and restful and at peace, and like the stress had dissipated. I actually did one last night as well, and someone had this like really intense neck pain, and he had a osteo appointment booked for I think tomorrow, and you know, during the sound bath meditation, he just like, I saw him kind of like shiver and shake, and what he told me afterwards, that the neck pain just like fully dissipated. So I was like, I'm not sure what I'll do with the osteopod. I might keep it just in case, but yeah, fully just. So I think, you know, the sound bath meditation, it works on so many levels, from a cognitive level, like really reducing those brain frequencies, from the body energetically, just clearing out any emotions, anything, any stuck energy. So it's really diverse, really accessible, and that's kind of where I'm going. Yeah.
Amazing. Cool.
Very, very cool. Podge, where can the world find you if they want to contact you for the vast array of services that you offer, including that of the general public?
Yeah. So I've got a website called Music Therapy Hub. So www.musictherapyhub.com. I'm also on Instagram. So just at Podge. So POJ. Integral Sound, connect through there, and I'm happy to share my number. I've also got an email address, contactmusictherapyhub@gmail.com. So a few points of contact, and happy for you to share that.
We will certainly do that. We will certainly do that. We'll offer that all in the show notes, and get any information that you want out to the community.
Yeah, awesome. Appreciate it.
Mate, fantastic. Thank you so much. We'll definitely have to do a round two again, because I think we've only scratched the surface, or listened to the first 5 minutes of a sound bath meditation.
Got to change the name on the website.
Yeah, exactly. I've got a whole entire list of questions that I want to follow up with already that are churning through my mind. But we'll save that for another day if you're open to jumping back on the show.
I would love to come back. It's been really nice kind of reflecting and sharing and, yeah, having the conversation with you both.
Brilliant, it's been wonderful having you on the show, Podge. Thank you, mate.
And thank you all.
Thanks for having me.
Once again, thank you, Podge. Thank you, Paulie. Thank you, everyone. And we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.